Friday, we bounce back, 28 degrees, 35 for Saturday, 32 on Sunday. Right now, 1 below for Racine, 5 below for Kenosha, 16 below the actual temperature in Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Most areas are now experiencing a 16 below wind chill. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 after 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. We are doing something that was not originally scheduled for today, but I'm really glad that it's happening. This weekend at Carthage College, there are two very special concerts, one Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, the other Sunday at 1:30, and they are the homecoming concerts for the Carthage Choir and the Women's Ensemble, respectively. Each ensemble is newly back from exciting tours abroad. The Women's Ensemble to China and the Carthage Choir to Spain. And it is the first time that each of those ensembles has ever traveled to those particular countries. So these tours and trips were especially noteworthy. And so in part one of today's program, I'm happy to be speaking, we hope, in a few minutes once he gets here, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli, the director of the Carthage Choir. But we already have three members of the Carthage Choir in our studios. The president of the choir, Lizzie Columbaris, who is a music theater major at Carthage, John Krill, music education, and Mike Anderley, who is a double major, music and history. And we'll get rolling with them, and Dr. Garcia Novelli will be rolling along, we hope, shortly. He had an errand he needed to do first. And a little later in the hour, we will we'll empty the studio of the Carthage Choir members and bring in Dr. Danae and two members of the Women's Ensemble to talk about their trip to China. In the meantime, Lizzie and John and Mike, we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having us today.
Thanks for getting up nice and early. Lizzie Columbaris, you're the president of the choir, and so we'll start with you with just a few basics about this exciting trip. And maybe we should mention that all three of you are seniors, and so all three of you, this is your second time taking an international tour with the Carthage mm-hmm. Choir. Just say a word about the significance of that.
It has been just the most special experience to be able to travel with Carthage and with Carthage Choir. We went to Ireland and Scotland the January of our freshman year, so it started our college experience, and now we just got back from Spain, which is sort of wrapping up our college experience. When I went to Ireland, I think I knew 4 or 5 people in the choir, and now I'm leading this choir, and I know everyone, and it makes me emotional just to think about where my relationships with these people have come and how far I've come as a student here, and I just love this choir so much, and I couldn't think of a better way to end my college career or start to end it than going abroad
Very good. And I should think it felt really different maybe to take this second trip versus what it felt like to go abroad as scrawny little freshman. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Lizzie, tell us about just the nuts and bolts of what it meant to go on this trip in terms of the obligations of each member of the choir. I mean, did everybody get to go? Was it an option at all? Did it involve any kind of extra financial outlay and so on?
Yeah, absolutely. Every 4 years, Carthage Choir travels abroad. So we've known for years that we were going abroad. We didn't know where we were going. Last year, it was divulged to us that we were going to Spain. You have the choice to go. You have to financially support yourself. The college is so wonderful and knocks off some money off of what we have to pay, but it's still definitely not cheap. I decided to not take summer stock work over the summer and not do theater work and just work at my summer job as I work at my dad's engineering firm, just so that I could pay for this tour. Obligations, we had to come back a week early. We cut a week out of our Christmas break, and we rehearsed for up to 6 hours a day. When we left for Spain, each section of the choir had a specific duty. Tenors had to, I think the tenors had to unload the bus, the basses had to load the bus, like all of our luggage. The altos had to keep the bus clean, and the sopranos had to clean up any rehearsal space that we had to make sure it looked just as nice as when we got there.
Boy, Dr. GN doesn't miss a thing. He's as meticulous in these kind of details as he is as a musician. I'm actually glad to hear that. I know that also for some of the members of the choir, this was not just a trip, but this was actually a course for which you registered. Lizzie, did you take the course?
I did not.
Okay, and not Mike either, but John did take the course. So tell us what that meant on top of what the rest of your choir mates did.
Well, the course was extra 2-hour commitment at the end of the day. So on top of the 6 hours, we had two more. And although it seems like a lot, it actually goes really quick. We had a great professor. She taught us amazing things that helped a lot in Spain. We went over everything from culture, past leaders of the country. We went over festivals, the different languages, music, dance, food, which is a huge thing in Spain. And it really helped bring the knowledge both to us and so that we could lead classmates and things that we learned in the class, so that when we got to Spain, we felt a lot more comfortable and willing to experiment a little bit and talk to the people of the country and get to know them a little bit better.
I suppose otherwise there'd be this natural hesitancy where you don't want to say the wrong thing or go to the wrong place or do something. Cool. And tell us a little bit about the professor specifically who also went along with you, right?
Yeah. We called her Profe for short, Isabella. She was a great
Isabella
person. Yeah, she was a great person. And one of the things I loved most about her, besides her fun attitude, was her appreciation for music as well. Oh. So she would come to each concert with us and record us. She was definitely our biggest fan by the end of the trip. And, you know, just giving us hugs to keep us going, giving us pats on the back, words of encouragement. She was a great person to have with and keep our attitudes high during the whole tour.
And she is from Spain. So we had Dr. Gien, who is from Argentina, but who has the Spanish. And she is from, she's lived all over Spain. And she studied in Salamanca. So she knew pretty much everywhere that we were going. She was experienced in the different languages that are there because in Spain they don't just speak Castilian Spanish. There's a lot of different languages. So just having that insight from her definitely made us feel more comfortable.
Very good. I remember from the day you folks left that she mentioned to me that this was the first time she was going to be away from her two little girls right. for any extended mm-hmm. time. So I'm not surprised she latched on to all of you with such affection. That probably helped her not feel quite so sad about being away from her kids. Mike, tell us about the concerts you sang. How many concerts did you sing, and in what sort of array of spaces were you performing?
Yeah, well, we sang 7 concerts. When our first day we landed in Madrid, and by the second day we were singing. We sang in a nice community performance place for the first concert.
It was like a theater.
It was like a nice small theater. The acoustics weren't the greatest, so we had to work a little bit harder to make sure our sound was really tight and very well executed. Mm-hmm. After that, we went to Salamanca. We didn't sing in Salamanca, but then we went to sing in Santiago de Compostela, and we sang in a very beautiful church, a very cold church.
We'll hear about that later.
Yeah.
But yes. Okay.
So we sang, and then after that, we went to Oviedo, mm-hmm. and I believe we sang a concert there.
I guess the
majority of the places we sang in were churches. Most of these places had absolutely beautiful, beautiful acoustics. I mean, you could hear the sound pinging off the walls for 2 or 3 seconds, and there was a lot of our repertoire was absolutely perfect for those spaces. We sang in one of our last concerts was at the University of Barcelona, where we sang in this great hall, and it was beautiful. It was from the 18th century, just phenomenally gorgeous, and a bunch of history in there. So it was exciting, and we all enjoyed it very much.
Cool. I know that one of the things that made this challenging in terms of the repertoire, although the repertoire of the Carthage Choir is always challenging, but maybe particularly so in that Dr. Garcia Novelli was really anxious for you to sing in a variety of dialects, would it be? Of Spanish. So
languages, yeah.
Tell us about that that challenge.
Sure. Well, we sang in Castilian, which most Americans would refer to as just regular Spanish. We also sang in Euskadi, which is the language of the Basque Country, and we also sang in Catalunian, which they speak in Barcelona, is the capital of the Catalunian region, the northeast of the country. But we sang 2 or 3 songs in Basque and 1 in Catalunian. It's very challenging. Catalunian's a mix of French and Italian and Spanish, so that's a little bit easier, but Basque is completely different. Lizzie, I don't know if you want to explain a little more of it.
I just have a little story to go along with this. I, as the president of Carthage Choir, was asked to greet the people at our concerts where, especially in the Basque country and in Barcelona, where Castilian Spanish is not their primary language. So our profe would take me aside, and she had written out this little few sentences of a greeting for me to say to the audience. And the Basque language does not have any origin. They are unsure of where it came from. So learning that language in maybe 2 minutes was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my entire life. There's a lot of just the words don't look like how they sound. But the smiles on people's faces when I was able to greet them in their native language was something that I'll never forget.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I'm sure that meant a huge amount. How many Spanish speakers were in the choir, would you roughly estimate?
I think there's a decent amount. There's probably about a dozen who have some basic Spanish understanding. There's probably 4 or 5 of us who are fairly proficient. And then there's, I think, one or two who are pretty close to, advanced Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then we have Dr. Gian.
And I'm sure they were all very popular people. And Dr. Gian has joined us, by the way. We'll bring him in a moment. John, why don't you recount the story of the really cold concert that Mike alluded to very briefly?
Yeah, well, we show up at our church. The majority, all except for 2 of our concerts, were with another choir. So we had a fan base already in place.
and some local choir from
correct,
the community.
Right, right. Yeah. So getting an audience wasn't too hard. But one of these concerts that we showed up at, we set up. The church was very cold, to the point where you could see your breath when you sing.
Wow, that's yes. cold.
The choir dresses aren't that insulated, don't have sleeves. Tuxes aren't much better. So we practice, we warm up, fog some windows. And with about 15 minutes left before the concert, we have about one person in the audience, possibly two. So we're kind of a little hesitant, wondering if we're going to get some more audience, and they're not coming in. So I would say a group of 10 or 15 of us went out into the streets and practiced our Spanish, got some more people into the concert, you know, saying concierto de coro, you know, trying to gratis, free, free.
Yeah.
And you know what? By the end, we had, I would say, about 60 people in the... Yeah, more than that, mm-hmm. and it was very well received. One of our best concerts, I would mm-hmm. say, and a great memory to have.
Wow, and you were and you wore coats for yes. the whole concert.
Yes. Yeah.
When I took the choir to Europe in 2000, we had a super cold concert in Hamburg, but we were just kind of soldiering on. And at the halfway point, the guys of the choir quite spontaneously just started taking off their tux jackets and putting them over the shoulders of the women next to them. So the choir ladies at least had these tux jackets, and the guys had long sleeve shirts and no frostbite. So you do what you have to do, and that's probably
absolutely.
All of those students' most memorable concert. That's great. Dr. Jian, why don't you just say a quick word about the challenge of a tour where every place you perform is brand new to all of you and a brand new place. I mean, even when you tour through America, that's a challenge to some extent. Were there any special surprises and challenges in this case?
Sure. Good morning. Before we go on, I must apologize for being a few minutes late. I had to go to the metro station to drop off my child, who's going to Chicago on his Model UN experience. By the way, since I'm in public radio, I should publicly ask for the metro station to have a place to drop off somebody, because the place is closed, unbelievably closed, 30 minutes before the train departs. Mm. Not a good idea on a cold day. So that's why I had to be in the car waiting for that.
Sure.
In any case, so we had 7 concerts, and all of them, of course, were different locations, different acoustics, different layouts for that. I think that it's good to know that we had set aside some time to look at the space and to make sure that we could situate the choir in a way that we would use the venue to our advantage, and that for the choir to be comfortable and for the sound to be the best we could offer. And that always took some negotiating with the place, moving some pews or something around to make space for that. I am a believer that sound needs space.
Mm.
So
you don't like people packed in too
exactly.
close together, yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like some spectacular music making was done, and it sounds like some recordings were made, so someday we'll get to hear maybe from
someday
some of these
is a
concerts.
Good word.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So you didn't just sing concerts, but you sang plenty of them, but there was some time for tourism activities and free fun and so on. What are some of your most memorable experiences sort of in the off hours, so to speak?
Sure. Well, the first day we landed, and we were going on about 24 hours or about 20 hours or so, you know, being awake. But we landed and we went to the Prado Museum in Madrid. And it's a beautiful museum, but plenty of paintings of Goya and Greco, Velázquez, just a lot of beautiful things. So we were very lucky we got to see those, and we had a guided tour of that, and that was nice.
Hmm.
One of my favorite memories was being in Salamanca, which is it's a very big university town. That is where our profe, she studied there for some time, and she, during the day, there's a big square called the Plaza Mayor, and that is where you go to meet your friends, and then you go off to see the rest of the town. During the day, Profe had come up to me and said, "Lizzie, meet me in the Plaza Mayor at 10:30 tonight. Wear your dancing shoes.
Oh.
And so we had a big group of us, and she took us dancing and taught us how to salsa, and we taught her some American dances, and that was one of my favorite memories because she was so eager to teach us her her dances, and we were so eager to teach her ours, and it was just a great way of great night of bonding and just a special memory for me.
Fantastic. John?
I would say my biggest experience and possibly challenge was the food there. You know, it's such a different culture, and including the types that you eat. So Spain is very big on seafood, which I am getting used to. Ireland was a first step. And by this time, I'm pretty comfortable, you know, with the American version of seafood. But you would go to Spain and you would get shrimp and paella or something like that. And, you know, everything would come whole. So you'd have to break the head off, break the legs off. You know, this new level of eating that you're not used to. So we got to experience that crab, shellfish of all kind, oysters, mussels.
But you're dismembering these things before you can eat them.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. You really build up an appetite, you know. But also this culture of during the day for lunch, you would go to maybe one tapas bar or pincho bar, and you would get, you know, two or three little things and maybe a beer or a glass of wine, and then you would leave that place and then go to another one. And by the end of the meal, you possibly hit four different places and got to experience all these different types of food and all these different people on your way.
Cool. I saw a few pictures of one day at the beach, but I understand most of the time it really wasn't beach weather.
Oh, no.
For some reason, when we picture Spain, we never picture it being chilly. What was the weather like? I know it wasn't ideal for beach activities.
It was nicer than it was here. I mean, it was chilly. I was wearing a scarf and multiple layers, whether it be a sweatshirt and a light jacket over it, or a sweater, a scarf, a jacket, and my winter coat. But it was never, except for that concert in Santiago de Compostela when we were all bundled up, I was never very miserable. It wasn't that cold.
To be exact, it was between freezing point and 52, 53 degrees. That's more or less what it was every day. Now, to be honest, the problem with Santiago de Compostela, the concert there, not that outside was so cold, is simply that you have a beautiful old church without heat system, and it's going to be colder inside. It's colder inside than outside, so that's why it was difficult to sing there.
Well, we're glad everybody survived. Lizzie, I want to make sure you have a chance to briefly mention a little musical theater experience that you and a few of your colleagues got to have.
Yeah, while we were in Madrid, we went to see one of Dr. Gien's old students. I'm not sure of his last name. Could you say his name?
Zenón Recalde.
Gracias. There is a standing production of The Lion King, or El Rey León, in Madrid, where some of the music theater students were invited to sing a master class with this man who was one of Dr. Jan's students back in the day. We were lucky enough to get a backstage tour and see all of the costumes and all of the set pieces and just what goes into this huge show. The Lion King is a huge show, and this theater was not the biggest one I'd ever seen. So it was really interesting to see how they did that. And then we sang our masterclass on the stage. So I was singing my song, and our lovely accompanist Matt Smith was playing the piano, and I was looking out, and there was all of these orchestra seats and different balconies, and it was absolutely gorgeous. I think there were eight or nine of us who had the opportunity to sing and get this wonderful new insight from Zenón. He is the children's director of The Lion King, so he's in charge of the little kids who play Simba and Nala in The Lion King. And he's very knowledgeable of music theater. He went to the London Academy of the Dramatic Arts. I believe something like one of the really big theater schools in London. He has a certificate about that he's certified to teach music theater, and he definitely knew what he was talking about.
Cool.
So it was a really, really wonderful experience, and I'm lucky to have had it.
That's great. A fun little surprise in the midst of everything else. Guys, I'll give you 30 seconds for one more recollection of Spain. Go.
I really loved how receptive the Spanish people were to the music. And the language barrier certainly was there, but I think we all got along really well with the people who came in to watch us, and we actually got to converse with them, and they were very appreciative, and it was a great cultural experience.
Terrific. John?
I think that there's so many preconceived notions about Spain that were blasted away with the knowledge that you gained throughout the trip, and it was a great experience to learn more just about the world.
Mm. And Maestro, I know that in talking to you that you were especially happy not only with how well the choir sang, but how beautifully they got along, which is not always the easiest thing when you're away from home and day after day in a long trip. It sounds like this was an exceptional group of young people.
Yeah, I was going to say that 30 seconds is too little, but I will try to press the accelerator. Three things. One, the academic experience. It was wonderful to have a CSIM. For the first time, we did a college symposium class.
Yep, we talked about that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and also that it was so pertinent, all the information that Profe was providing and experiencing in the country and learning songs in four different languages and things like that. Mm. Then the professional or artistic side, which is the choir sounded beautifully, sung really beautifully and as beautiful as ever or better, and I think that better is the word. And then the human aspect, and that's why yesterday when I had the first meet with the choir after the trip, I told the three of them who are here, who are seniors, that it is probably because of the seniors in the class in the choir, there's like 15 of them, that they sort of set the tone for this trip to be humanly a success, as just a success as it was artistically.
Mm, very good. Madam President, remind our listeners about the homecoming concert that I know you're all excited about.
Yes, we have a homecoming concert on Saturday at 3 p.m. in the Siebert Chapel at Carthage College. We will be singing most of the music that we took with us to Spain. There will be a beautiful slideshow of pictures that members of the choir took, and it's just going to be a wonderful way to end our Spanish experience.
Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, Siebert Chapel, and everyone can come and enjoy the music and hear more about this marvelous experience in Spain. So our thanks to Lizzie Columbaris, John Krill, and Mike Anderley, all seniors in the Carthage Choir, and, of course, Dr. Eduardo Garcia Novelli. Good to have you here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Part two of the morning show with the Women's Ensemble talking about their trip to China, coming up in just a moment here on WGTD. And now for part two of today's morning show, and I'm delighted to welcome into the studios, first of all, Dr. Peter Dene, who is the director of Carthage's Women's Ensemble, and two members of the choir, Paige Whitney and Leanne Jamora. And one of you is a senior and one of you is a junior, and what are you studying at Carthage?
Oh, I'm a sophomore.
Oh, okay. Whoops. All right.
Oh, okay. Sophomore.
Yeah, sophomore.
Really?
Yeah.
That's Dr. Dene's very close
so
to his
Paige, human. Yes, she's a sophomore.
A sophomore and studying what at Carthage?
I'm an English major.
English major.
Yes.
Very good. And Leanne?
I'm a freshman and I'm a finance major.
Finance major. Very good. Good to have all of you here. And so the Carthage Choir, and I don't remember if it got said or not in the course of that fast and furious interview, but the tour which they just did to Spain is the first time the Carthage Choir has ever been to Spain. And this is, I'm sure, the first time the Women's Ensemble has ever been to China. Dr. Dene, had you ever been to China before?
I was in China just this past summer.
with a group of music theater students who traveled, and I was just accompanying them and didn't really have any responsibilities other than just kind of figuring things out for myself.
So at that point, this tour was already a reality.
It was. There was a plan to do it. I had announced it to the women that we were going to do it, but I didn't have any idea how we were going to get it done. So the summer was really important to kind of figure that out.
Maybe you could say a word about Carthage's relationship with China, or the way in which China figures very prominently with the college overall, and especially with, of course, our own music department.
Right. I think it's we're still figuring out all the relationships we want to have. In one longstanding one is with a city called Huairou, which is they call it a suburb, but it's pretty far out from Beijing, and it's over a million people. I'm not sure of the population, but Huairou is one place where we have, for many years now, had students, our teachers actually, who are in the public schools, come and teach our students Chinese. So that's one place. And then our department chair, Karine Ness, has made connections at the Shanghai Conservatory and the Beijing Conservatory and some other bigger schools around Shanghai and Beijing, where we have recruited students to come both as undergraduates for a year or to work on a master's program, or even just to work with the music theater students here at Carthage. So those are two of the things. And I know Tom Klein at Carthage is reaching out to some other places where we're bringing in students to study at Carthage for a year. Mm-hmm.
Did anything in particular generate this idea for you to take the women's ensemble to China? I mean, did it feel just like an entirely natural progression from these other ventures, or was there something else going on that was more of a direct catalyst?
I think it was the last time the women's ensemble has done one other international tour that I know of in the history of our ensemble, and that was in 2007. I took a group of students to Central Europe, and so I thought it was time again to do that again, and I just, I think for my own curiosity and my own desires, I had never gone, west of California. And so I thought, let's look someplace over in that direction. I've been to Central Europe many times. I take a group to Africa almost every year. So I wanted to try someplace new. And I know there's a lot of, in the choral world, there's a lot of push for these connections between China and America. That just this past year, they had the American Choral Directors Association had brought, I think, at least five or six choral directors from China to America to kind of go to these different regions around the country to work with choir directors. And then ACDA was sending other choir directors to China. China has a real desire to build a choral music tradition. It's not part of their kind of cultural tradition historically, but it's really a growing area in music there right now.
Mm. Paige and Leanne, I'm curious from you how you greeted the possibility of taking a trip all the way to China. I think for most people, unless you're exceptional, find that really intimidating and daunting. It's a little more daunting than going to Turkey or going to going to Scotland. Going to China feels like a very different place. How did you react to the news that this was a possibility?
I was really excited just from the get-go when it was first mentioned. I remember last spring being really absolutely stoked for it because I'm a Japanese minor.
Ah.
So I have kind of a, not a prerequisite, but sort of a, already an interest in the Asian countries. So I was really excited at the possibility of going halfway across the world and experiencing something entirely different.
Mm. Leanne?
As for me, I've actually been to Asia, parts of Asia. So hearing the news about going to China really opened up my eyes because I've never been to such an upscale Asian country. Because where I'm from, the Philippines, is mostly third world, and it's right poverty stricken. So going to China, I was expecting to see some form, like, being Asian,
Yeah.
I kind of blended in with everybody. So something in China that I found, it's kind of deviating from your question, but I was often mistaken as the Chinese interpreter for the group, being the only Asian there. So that was an experience. But before then, I wasn't really expecting that to happen.
Right.
It was great. I loved it.
So even though you have some familiarity with this part of the world, this was still kind of a new venture for you in many respects.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Dene, what was involved in terms of the women, did, as with the Carthage Choir, did they have to come back early from Christmas? How much did you rehearse? So
we had a big challenge, not having done a tour to this to China before. I didn't know all the things that were going into it, and so we had planned to be back for a week for rehearsals, and then leave after that week. And then as I started putting the schedule together, it became obvious to me that that wasn't possible. That even though one of the big things that I checked on and why I knew this was a good year to go was that there, you know, the Chinese New Year moves around, and so. And you don't want to be there during Chinese New Year because it's hard to travel, because everybody's traveling. And so for some reason this year, Chinese New Year is in late February. And so I thought, this is perfect. But then what I found out was they still have this thing called Spring Festival, and it's in December. And all the schools, they have their finals basically the second and third weeks of, no, the second week of January. And so if we had gone, and then all the students leave, and I wanted, one of the things that I love to do when I travel is make sure that students connect with other students. Mm. And so the goal was to be at schools and colleges so they could do that. And so it became obvious that we had to be in China in that first week in January. And so we kind of did the whole thing while we were in China. We did the educational part as we were doing the music part.
So you were already there? Or
right, right. So Dr. Udry in the history department came with us. He's a specialist in China and other parts of Asia. And so he did the historical part, which was amazing and would be great to talk about. I don't know if we have time. I had to change my whole repertoire. It had to be stuff that we knew instead of taking the week to learn new things. So we basically took the music that we had learned in the fall we did several concerts throughout the fall, and then I took some things from the spring, which made it challenging because actually the majority of students who came were freshmen,
mm-hmm.
and so they didn't know, they didn't have that repertoire under their belts. And
wow.
So they had a lot of stuff to learn almost on their own before we met, and then while we were there. So it was a challenge. That was the challenge for us.
Wow. Did you end up singing anything at all in Chinese?
We didn't. I had a plan to do that. When I was there in the summertime, I met with a choir director in Nanjing who gave me several pieces of music, and there's some really great things. And the plan was to do one of those things, but we didn't end up doing that.
Right. There's only so much time. It sounds like it was a mad, frantic dash, but it worked out well in the end.
Yes.
How many women went?
We had 23 singers, which was another challenge because the choir is always at least 55 to 60 singers total. So this was less than half the ensemble went, and they all rose to the challenge and we had exceptional concerts. But that was challenging. The women's ensemble doesn't get funding from the college to do travel tours like this, so their tour was a little bit more expensive, so that's why we had to just go with who could go rather than having the whole ensemble travel.
Right. So neither of you had ever been to China before.
No.
Wow.
Does Hong Kong count?
Kind of. It kind of. Well, but boy, Hong Kong's a whole different thing, isn't it? It really is. So tell us about the experience, first of all, of performing, of the mm-hmm. concerts themselves. What kinds of places did you perform, and what did those concerts sort of feel like? I mean, what was sort of the atmosphere like as you performed?
The singing itself didn't feel also different, but we were in concert-type venue halls. The largest mm-hmm. one I think we were in was in the university in Nanjing. Those places were huge, mm-hmm. and surprisingly, the audiences were really full and very receptive to our songs.
Oh, yeah.
Not that American audiences aren't, but since choir is kind of an up-and-coming thing in China, they would get so excited. And I remember our first concert in Shanghai, we were finished, and they started clapping and asking for an encore, and we were like, sure, yeah, we'll do an encore. What are we, famous? So that was really interesting, and we have a song that has body percussion in it, and whenever we did it, we do it in, like, flash mob setting. We'd see a big group of people or we'd see children and we'd start doing it, and they were immediately, like, captivated, and they just would beam in and focus on us, and it was really, really cool and, like, different than you would experience in America, but totally mind-blowing.
Mm.
Awesome.
So in other words, they're taking this in with kind of a heightened sense of appreciation because it's this exciting new thing, relatively new thing in China, not part of their typical fabric.
Definitely.
Any thoughts about the concerts from you?
I love the concerts. They were great. And then the University of Nanjing especially struck me because we were able to interact with the audience. Like, for one of our songs, it was Be Like the Bird, where it was a round and we were holding hands with some of the students. And everybody in the audience was wondering why we were gathering around them. And we were starting to sing, and then they were just starting to turn their heads, like, whoa, look at that person, look at that person. Taking out their phones, putting it in their faces. We felt like celebrities the whole time.
The exciting thing about Nanjing was both for the first, we had two concerts in Nanjing. One was that it's the University of the Fine Arts, and the first concert we had two other choirs joining us, an elementary school choir and the women's choir from the university. And so there were, those two choirs together were 100 people plus our 23, 25. So it was a big number of students, people, and we surrounded the audience to sing this song. And I think that one thing that became obvious to me as we did this was that they've never seen that before, where an ensemble moves off the stage and does something in the audience. And so oftentimes after the concert, I had lots of questions about that. Why did we do that? And what, you know, this was a round. And I think also rounds are maybe not that popular there, because as the round kind of developed, you started to hear the audience kind of making these sounds.
For something that we so utterly take for granted.
Right. Yeah. It's also very common in China to have your cell phone out while the concert's going on, and people are using it, and it's not, you know, they don't have the same kind of concert etiquette. So everybody had their phones out and was videoing our performance of that. The second night in Nanjing, we also added a third choir that was another group of about 50 singers. So we had over 150 people, 175 people out standing in this. I guess they didn't join us out there, but we did several pieces together. And so this was a choir of choir teachers from the public schools within the whole province of where Nanjing is located.
And how is it that they even knew the piece in question?
They got it ahead of time.
Oh, so it was a coordinated thing.
Yes,
you sent it. And they learned it and joined you. Yeah. How exciting!
Yeah. One more, because this was exciting for me. We did this piece by Abby Batinas, called We Have Come. That is, typically we do it with a cello and it's got percussion in it. And I asked ahead of time if there was an erhu player who could do our cello part. And so that was really amazing. The erhu is kind of like, they call it the Chinese violin, but it's something that kind of rests on your leg and is upright and only has two strings on it. And so it was really, that was fascinating. And then I also, another piece that we performed was Adiemus by Carl Jenkins. And that piece we typically do with recorder. And I had a bamboo flute player perform that for us. And that also just kind of added a different character that we were.
Wow.
So kind of added this kind of Chinese influence into the music that we had sung before.
Oh, how cool. To sort of consecrate it in a sense with this touch of the Chinese. That's really, really great. In addition to the concertizing, of course, you probably saw and experienced some amazing things. Talk about some of that off-hour activity that was especially memorable for you.
I think one of the most poignant and, like, memorable experiences was when we were in Nanjing, we met the university students right away, and they were taking us on tours, and we mentioned, expressed interest in a thing called KTV, which is their version of karaoke, and so much more ritzy than America. You rent your own room, it's all touchscreen. And once we expressed interest, one of our guides, Tina, was like, I'll take you to KTV, don't you worry.
So how did you even know about it?
I don't remember. I think somebody must have mentioned it in Shanghai or
Jack may have talked about it because they did it. They did it when the music theater group went.
That
last summer they did KTV. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So the last night we were there, we finally got everybody together. We took taxis after our concert. Mm-hmm. There was probably five Chinese people that were friends with the two that we knew. And then there was like 10 of us, we were in like the second biggest room. We just had a blast. We turned the music up all the way, and they had American songs, and they were singing Chinese folk songs for us. Mm. Sue did one. She's like a classically trained soprano, beautiful. And everybody sat spellbound as she just like belted out these notes, and it was so fun and an experience we wouldn't have probably been able to do on our own because I don't know how much Chinese we could have communicated to the people that worked there. Mm. But that's something I definitely won't forget, and we had a blast.
Wow, that really sounds neat. The end.
Oh, no. well, when I was going to China, I always wanted to be at the Forbidden City or the Forbidden Palace. So I was fascinated at that idea because you see it in movies being portrayed as a very historical place where Kung Fu was done in the gardens, or there were political leaders like Mao Zedong walking through casually, and once you got in, it was really crowded, so I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah. No. So it wasn't at all what you thought?
Not at all. It was everything and more.
Very exciting. What was it like to eat in China?
The Chinese food was so good.
Very good.
And everybody said, it's so different from American food. And the weird thing was that we drink so much when we eat here, and I think it must be the sodium level, because there, when you're presented with tiny little glasses, you're like, I'm going to be so thirsty. But as the trip went on, we got more used to it, and the food didn't really make you thirsty. Mm-hmm. And street food was like such an experience.
Remember when we ate scorpion?
I ate a scorpion. Our last night in Beijing, and Leanne videotaped me. And so that was the big experience. Like, duck tongue was strange, you know, chicken feet, but scorpion was like top of the list. There was delicious things like skewers and meat buns and stuff. So not all of it was strange, but food was very cheap too. So you got to experience a lot of it.
Oh, very good.
We were very fortunate, again, to have Dr. Yudri there who basically did our ordering for us when we were in restaurants. And so we always had – he made a point of making sure we had different cuisine styles as we went through. But there was always food that was might have been challenging but was not – our first – we also had a Chinese guide with us the whole time, Cooper, who was really amazing. But our first restaurant experience, he did the ordering, and that was more of a challenge for our students because he thought he was ordering what you traditionally order when you have a group of Chinese people who are eating. And so it was food that was very unfamiliar to us. And so a lot of people ended up not eating that first night.
Oh, dear. And,
but after that, Dr. Yudri helped with the ordering, and it was really a great experience. And foods that the Chinese restaurants in America are really not at all representative of the food that you eat in China.
Yeah. Right. I want to finish, at the end we'll let you talk about Sunday afternoon's concert, but I thought you might also maybe want to expand on what I think Paige was mentioning earlier, this what would happen from time to time on the tour when some of your singing would occur, not on your concerts, but in public places. Professor Yudri was actually telling me that, and it sounded like that was a very, very memorable aspect of all this.
There were several opportunities when we were – oftentimes the students were just allowed to kind of wander on their own, but when we were together doing a tour of a historic place or parts of the city, if we came upon a spot where there were just kind of people gathered, which happens a lot in China, there's lots of just – they get together to do Tai Chi or just to do movement things. You see groups of people doing movement stuff all the time. And one of the most memorable ones where we, or there were two that we stopped and did, we sang this piece called Bring Me Little Water, Sylvie, that has body percussion of basically movement. One was, we were, I can't remember the name of Summer Palace, I think we were visiting in Beijing, and there was a group, there were a group of people who were originally from the western part of China, which is more rural, very much more rural, and lots of traditions still there, and they get together once a week and dance and wear their traditional outfits, and so they were here dancing and doing their traditional music, and the first thing that happened was some of some of the women just started joining them to dance, and so they were kind of trying to imitate the movements that these people were doing, and then we were leaving and we suggested, why don't we sing for them? And so